and individual military leaders took a series of what might be called halting steps toward emancipation. There would be a step forward. Sometimes you'd have to retreat from that step, but then you'd advance beyond that. Both generals and Congress contributed to this process. And many of them had in mind the fact that international law possibly could be applied to the question of whether or not the United States would be able to strike at slavery in the Confederacy. There's a provision of international law that says in wartime, an enemy's property is subject to confiscation, property that can be used to sustain the enemy's war effort. If you get access to it, you can take it, because that is something that would give aid and comfort to the military side of your enemy. Advocates of confiscation argued that the blockade and the treatment of captured Confederate soldiers as prisoners of war indicated that this was, in fact, a war between two nations rather than simply an insurrection on the part of Southerners who were still inside the United States. If it's a war between two nations, they said, international law can apply. If it's merely an insurrection on the part of some white Southerners, international law won't apply. The Constitution would apply. Sometimes Abraham Lincoln treated it as a war between nations, as when he called for a blockade. You can't really blockade yourself. That really is a concession that you're fighting against another nation when you institute a blockade. If you say that you're going to treat soldiers from your enemy's armies as prisoners of war, you're conceding that they're really soldiers for another nation. Otherwise, you just treat them as rebels or as traitors rather than as prisoners of war. At other times, Lincoln would argue that the states hadn't really left the Union. They're really still in it. They're just temporarily under the control of evil people. Well, those who wanted to strike at slavery tended to argue that no, the states were gone. We're fighting another nation. And here, international law can apply. The first person who did that was General Benjamin Franklin Butler of Massachusetts. An absolutely fascinating character. He's a political general, one of the North's political generals. He's in command someplace or another through the entire war, although he has almost no military ability. He shows his lack of ability wherever he goes, his military ability, but he's a very astute politician. Belonged to virtually all the major political parties of his time at one time or another. He was a Democrat. He was a Republican. He was a liberal Republican. He was a radical Republican. Ben Butler was one of those people who wakes up in the morning, sort of goes like this, figures out which way the wind is going and trims his sails beautifully and goes right along with that wind. And he, to mix my metaphors, he always landed on his feet when he switched parties. So he's an able politician, pioneer in arming blacks to fight for the Union, and also one of the most hated Northern figures of the war. And he's hated for two reasons, really. One had to do with his being the Union commander in New Orleans in 1862, when he issued an order saying that Southern women who had been in the habit of, from second-story windows and balconies, dumping their chamber pots onto Union officers, spitting on them, or yelling things at them. He said that women who did that would be treated as women of the evening, pursuing their avocation. Well, the white South thought, he's calling our women prostitutes. He's a monster. He's a beast. He was accused of stealing spoons and silver in New Orleans. They hated him for that. They also hated him because of what he did relating to slavery on the peninsula, which is what we'll look at now. In May 1861, he commanded at Fort Monroe, at the tip of the peninsula. And a few African Americans who'd been working on Confederate fortifications escaped to Butler's lines. He refused to return them to their masters, and he said, "These men are contraband of war, and I will not return them." That phrase stuck, and for the rest of the war, slaves who made their way to federal lines were called contrabands. Now, here's an example of the idea of self-emancipation, of course, too. These men took it upon themselves to go to Union lines, and then Ben Butler said, "I'm not going to send them back. Not going to send them back." A second military commander who had an impact in this area was John C. Fremont. In August 1861, as commander of the Department of Missouri, Fremont issued an order confiscating the property and freeing the slaves of all rebels in Missouri.